Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. It's Marcia Cook, and here we are at A Good Story is a Good Story. And we have a special guest, Barbara Watkins, and it's October 4th, and it's 9 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Central. And we will start off the show probably, Sandra's with us. Sandra's producing the show with me. Sandra, how are you?
Awesome, Cook.
I know you're not getting out of talking with me. We're going to be talking. I keep asking you to talk. Okay, and this is going to be a great show. Brandon Pomeranz is also with us, and his phone, he's having a lot of problems because he's in the East Coast, and I think they're having a lot of bad weather. So, Bennett, come in, say hi to everybody.
Howdy, Doody, and the rest of them.
In case we lose you.
And to the aliens out there, I want to say I love you, E.T.
All right, and I'm going to have Barbara come out in a minute, but Barbara, you know, she is a writer. She's done so many things. She really has, and I, you know, looking up her bio, she's got a lot going on here, and this is why she's actually the only guest. The three of us are here, and we're going to let her talk a lot. Her new book is coming out, and it's called Howling Screams, and it should be out on Halloween, and we're getting there. And I can't believe it's October, but this should be a fun show. Candace was supposed to be with us, but Candace is a little under the weather. And so, Candace, if you're listening, we hope you feel better. We love you, and we hope you come back to the show and sometimes co-host. We want to see you out more. Okay. And hi, Barbara.
Hi.
Hi, Marcia. How are you?
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great. I made a mistake in the timing. Didn't have you. I booked two people at the same time, which I usually don't do, because I kept changing times. So now we're on a regular time, I think. 9 o'clock is what I was before. And I just wanted, before we start into conversation, I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, because there is so much. I mean, you have a lot on you. And one of the reasons I wrote something in, you know, when I was promoting the show is because it's really important for people to know to keep going on. And if you keep going on, these things happen. So I think that this is probably the best thing that could happen to you is that you're still out there. And see, that's one of the things people are, because I already see people that are on Facebook. I'm looking at what they're writing and what they're saying, and I could see they're going to be out of it soon because they're waiting for miracles to happen. But you have to make your own, and you did. So I want you to tell people some of the things you do.
You do.
So there you are.
You have to take initiative, you know. It doesn't matter if you're with a big publisher, small publisher, self-publishing. It doesn't matter. You have to get, you got to get your name out there. You got to network, you know. The internet, it's just, I mean, it's wonderful because there's so many Facebook, Twitter, so many sites for networking and, you know, and making good friends and, but you have to try to keep your name out there. You know, you have to try to keep what's going on, what's new, what's, you know, you got to make it fresh. You got to keep it fresh and keep it going all the time.
And that's what you're doing. I mean, you do that. But, you know, and you have a new book coming out, which you wrote like a couple years you wrote the book and you finally got it out here now, right? Which takes time.
Yeah. It does. It's been about 3 years, and I had sent it in to R.J. Buckley Publishing, and I guess it was about 3 months ago, 4 months ago, because what I did is I had submitted it, but then I kind of held it back because I had quite a few revisions I knew I needed to do. I wanted to add a little bit, take out a little bit. So, you know, I've been doing this process off and on, but I finally got it, you know, like I thought I wanted it, and I sent it to them, and it was about 3 months, 2 or 3 months, I guess, and they answered back, and, you know, they really, really liked it. They liked the plot, the storyline and everything, but it needed, you know, it still needed a little bit of work, so I went back to the board and added a little bit, took out a little bit, did a little more, and sent it back in. And then in a couple of weeks, about 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, I got a call, you know, and she's, you know, wanted wanted to send me a contract and look it over. So
that's a good call to get. We like those calls. we all wait for those calls.
Yeah, and so I looked it over and everything. It really was sounded really good, and we negotiated a good contract, and so it's coming out October 31st.
Well, this is so exciting. Okay, and I know.
And how long have you had this book festering?
It actually about 3 years.
From initial concept to the final book process, or are you talking just 3 years where it just came up?
Well, it's just I was telling Marcia, I kept doing revisions on it, tweaking it. I just couldn't get it exactly like I wanted it. And so I had submitted it to probably about 15, 20 places, but then I pulled back because I knew it wasn't. I didn't feel like it was ready, and so I took some out and put it back in and. You know, just kept doing like that until I finally got it, you know, like I wanted it.
Well, see, this is the thing. I mean, you seem like you're very fussy, okay? And that's very important, okay? Because even before a book comes out, if you're not fussy and you just let it go out, then it's like, it's the worst. I mean, people don't understand that this is the most, it has to be edited to the best it can be. Listen, there's mistakes and there's in everything. But if it's not the best you can do, then even if it's self-published, if it's traditionally published or self-published, it's still a reflection on what you do. So you want to make the best, you know, example. You know, you want to show them that you know how to write. And actually,
Then it's my turn to tell you what I think.
Okay. The other thing I forgot to say is also, I just want to say Sandra is also a reviewer, and she's not reviewed as much as Bennett has, because Bennett has done a million of them, and so is Fran. But I think that probably Sandra would be also a good person to send to. So because one of the things I wanted to say before you read the review is, what I'm finding out lately is a lot of people are reviewing books, and they really aren't reviewers. They're not writers. They're just out there, and they're giving people negative reviews, and they're not really they don't really understand this business as much as people that are writing usually do. And
I agree with you, and I disagree with you, because if you look everybody in that, like Fran, I know reads the book fully. I read the book fully.
Yes, I know that.
The only problem is, you don't want a book. I don't want to have a 20-hour reading, a 20-hour blow-by-blow account of the book. I want to give me the bottom line, Ishmael. Maybe teach them a lesson too, comparing them to somebody or something else, or showing that where they are and who they are, and what it's about. I know one of the guests we're having next week on the show is Leanne Murphy, and I love her dearly. And she wrote a book, and I said, you're not the erotic Shakespeare, but you did a good job. And she enjoyed it immensely, because she knew I meant that her book is Romeo and Juliet. But a lot of people, I got emails from people going, erotic Shakespeare? What are you talking about? you have to sometimes educate the people.
Yeah. Well, you are a professor. Shall we call you professor? But you are.
Yes, you can call me a professor.
Yeah,
yes.
I know. this is the thing. You know, I mean, because what's happening now is, I mean, I've been really researching. I've been in this business like 18 years, and I am seeing so many things change so fast, and I am seeing so many things, and it's not for the better, because I think what's happening is some of the writers are just running around in a circle, and, you know, and they're not really getting to where they need to go, which everybody seems to know that one of my things is I want people to continue to write. It's really important to me to have them continue to write, because you can't stop, and, you know, and what's happening is they're going around on Facebook, they're asking each other questions, they don't really know what to do, they're paying unnecessary money, and it's just, they need to have certain things, and I'm working on right now what I think is good and what is not. Not that I am no means saying that I'm the only person that knows anything, but I'm saying that I'm trying to figure out myself. I have 6 or 7 books out here. I'm trying to figure out what's right for everybody. And I don't know. you know, and I know, but I want you to read, you know, Fran writes a very long review, but I do, because the reviews aren't out yet on your book and your book is coming out, I do think you have, you know, it's a scary book, and I think this is a great time for it to come out, but I think that as long as we have the review here, I think you should, you know, say it, because I think that this may help people decide if they want to buy the book. And I've been reading the book, and your writing is really very good. It's there's no, I mean, it's to the point, and that's why I think Sandra would like to read this. And, you know, I think that people that, like Sandra's done a lot of shows, she's been involved with the Red River, she's been involved now with us in the World of Ink, and these are the people that will help you with reviews, and that's the people that you need to have. And I now,
I think
you want to
rubbed off on a little too, right, Sandra?
Just a little.
Well, Bennett is going to get you. You're going to give your book to Bennett, and also my office. Now we're going to have Mary. She's. I want her. I want to see what's going on with all the books, and I want to see what people are saying. And so I think that this is the best way I can help people, because I really want to say, like, I can. You know, I've done this long enough, and I can read a chapter of a book, and I'm sure Bennett does a lot of this for years and years. You see a chapter, and you know if that book is going to be good or not. I mean, it's not fair to say that you, I believe in beginning, middle, and end, but you can tell in the 10 pages.
Well, you can tell on
style.
A chapter and a short story. You can tell.
Yeah.
Usually the short story narrative hook, Barbara knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
If the short story
yeah.
narrative hook doesn't work,
right.
you know, just put this thing away. But
yeah.
even when
yeah.
you're writing a novel, if you hook your reader always, you're going to have a great thing. I
right.
mean, I remember this novella, Behind the Red Door. You might have heard of that one, Barbara. Haven't
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody sent that to me long ago.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I read it, and I think I know who you are.
Yeah.
I think that's yours, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I got the right. I'm not yet. Okay. I want to do something that I've been wanting to do that I used to do to Hal Clement. I'm not worthy. I'm not. Okay. No. I remember that story
well, this is
very
the
much.
Show to do it on. Actually, this is the show to do it on because there are no.
Oh, okay.
But
no, I remember that story, and it was the novella, and it really was an interesting piece of work. And I don't know if it's been reprinted or whatever. I remember reading it years ago. What was it, about 206, 207? I'm just doing this ballpark. This is, and I remember this. And I'm going, Barbara Watkins, Barbara, where have I heard that
so
name before? I'm sorry?
I'm feeling really humble right now.
Well, don't be humble. Believe me. You yourself know if people have books. I was impressed with it because it really was a fascinating little piece of work. You
that's
shouldn't,
a good thing,
you know,
because we all know that Bennett does not say what he doesn't mean.
I say exactly what I mean. If I think it's a piece of crap,
well,
I will say it's a piece of crap.
And I
there are
I
other
know,
words,
I,
but I do try to keep it clean. Crap is good. You can say crap
well,
on the radio. You can't say the other words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
But no, yeah. I remember reading your I'm going, I know this woman, and I'm going, oh my God, I know who you are.
Well,
you
that's
the,
a good thing.
You did the, I think some mystery or science fiction conventions too. You were amazing.
Yeah.
She does a lot.
So
she does a lot of things, so it didn't just happen overnight for her. Okay, so I think that, you know, before we do anything, let's, you know, I think Fran does a very different book review than anybody that I know. Sometimes she puts herself into this wholeheartedly. And, you know, so I want you to read this, and Fran Lewis is the one that did this. And then, and Bennett is going to review it, and Sandra, and in my office you can send it to. We're all, everybody's going to review it, because I think that these are the reviews that count.
Wonderful.
You know,
yes.
And Bennett has done so many reviews, and he remembers you is a great thing. And see, that's good. But you kept going on, and that's good.
Yes.
Well, it's scary when you remember somebody. You can remember them good or bad. I remember you good. Take that as
a
compliment.
A good
oh, I
good.
Do. I do.
Good is all right. That's we don't want. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm not going to say another word. We're going to let Barbara do this. And Barbara, okay, do you have the review in front of you, or do you have it?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
And it's by Fran Lewis. And,
okay.
Okay, heed my warnings, or what will happen next will be your own doing. Listen to my words and understand that I might be an old woman in an old body, but my thoughts are very clear, and I'm here to protect you from what will certainly be the end of many people in this town. My name is Lola. I can see the past, present, and future, and teach you as your spirit guide to do the same. If you do not heed my warnings, then what has already happened in Patton will pale in comparison to what will become the end result. One of you, or all of you, has learned who I am, and I've told you what must be done. One of those who you think is really your friend, nurturer, and here to help you is not. That person is manipulative, divisive, and quite dangerous. Those unexplained deaths are just the beginning. Hear my plea. Heed my warning. Look around you. Decide which of whom you can trust. Who is still here and who's missing? Or are they? Who really killed themselves? Or was it murder? Who might profit from what is happening? And who will be left standing at the end? My name is Lola. I was sent here to guide you. Take my black book, open it, go back and forth, and find out about your past, present, and learn your future before it's too late. One of you has the strongest connection to the spiritual world. Listen, before it's too late. Imagine a life that you did not know existed. Voices in your head, thoughts you can't remember. Memories that are so vivid and clear they frighten your every being down to the core. Haunting you, making you think your surroundings are haunted. Yet in a flash of lightning or a snap of a finger, you remember nothing. Approached about your behavior, you become defensive and claim you have no idea what the person's talking about. Katrina Rosenberg lost both parents due to tragic circumstances. Her father hanged himself and her mother overdosed on laudanum. Could these incidents have caused her mental illness? Married to Howard White, would he be able to endure what could come next? Or why? Finding out about his wife's visit to a doctor angered Howard until the true reason came out. Elated that he was going to be a father, their life should have improved. So why was Katrina upset? Inner rage, anger, serious mental issues caused her to try to terminate her daughter's life before and after she was born. Violent behavior, abuse, and unpredictable outbursts were the norm for Katrina. Abusing Howard with her words and belittling him in front of their daughter drove him to become an alcoholic to escape the reality of his life. Katrina, abusive and mean to Shannon, unfeeling and belittling to her father, Shannon grew up in a home filled with hate, anger, and fear. However, that would soon turn around in her favor. Insults, innuendos, threats, and outbursts could have been what caused one child to become a carbon copy of her mother, or was it in her all along? Woken in the dead of night, Shannon faces more tragedy as nightmares haunt her sleep, and the worst is yet to come. Shunned in school, belittled, her dog star missing, or was he murdered? A father that left home and a mother who could care less. What Shannon does is definitely not what any seven-year-old would do. One boy who made fun of her would get the shock of his life in a brownie. One man who made rude remarks and inappropriate gestures toward her would get an eye-opener. The story moves ahead to Shannon's first year out of college and her work as a doctor of psychology. Coming home to a different life, hoping to make a difference in others, but can she? Mood swings. Shannon's live-in boyfriend, James, is trying to deal with her the same way Howard dealt with her mother. Two women, unstable minds, but which one is insane? I show myself outside of Larry's bar. He sees me, but I disappear without a word. Maggie, the owner of the flower shop, sees me next, but she's not the only one that I track down. Claire's husband is sent out on his field tractor and wound up dead. Why? James does not know it, but his life is about to be drastically changed as well. Approaching both Larry and James, I try to impress upon them the power that they have to control these events, prevent the evil from happening, and save lives. But who will believe the word of a stranger, an old woman? Fear sets in, and the worst is still to come, as one of their own is so devious, unfeeling, and will to do anything to destroy the lives of those who think he or she is helping them or cares about them. I offered each one the black book, but only one, Claire, opened it. And what happened next, you won't believe. Then the phone rings and Shannon gets the call she never expected. Her mother seems cured, able to function in society. Will she let that happen? Could she? Heed my warning. Evil is all over. Can you feel the chill in the air? what lies in the inside. I'm sorry. What lies in the outside world for Katrina should have bettered her life. What happens will send chills down your spine as Shannon gives her mother anything but the kind and wonderful welcome you would expect a daughter to bestow upon a parent. Hateful, resentful, and cruel words come out of her mouth, and the kindness her mother shows James causes her more inner rage and resentment. Anyone that does not cower to her will, care about her the most, or show signs of compassion or caring for anyone else in her presence must face the wrath of Shannon. As a result of the unexplained murders and deaths, Frank Smith gives Maggie a gun to protect herself. Thinking that she's in danger and in deep sleep, she accidentally pulls the trigger. Burying him in the backyard, she doesn't notice a figure lurking about, watching her every move. Maggie has demons of her own from the past dealing with her father. Shannon has kept Maggie's secret for years, but will she keep this one or use it against her? As Maggie confesses to James about Frank, he calls the lawyer only to find the body missing before Michael Burns shows up. Coming up with the story, they hope he believes they get rid of him, but he's not easily fooled. Is that why he gets into an accident? What really happened? Covering for Maggie and bringing her to live with them, Shannon and Katrina prove fatal for one of them and dangerous for the other. Shannon is deranged, unbalanced, and divisive, but clearly capable of changing events, orchestrating outcomes, and controlling the minds of those she feels are weak. Yes, there is much more. Larry connects with our Lola, and so does Claire. Then the unthinkable happens, and he sees Frank's spirit, his spiritual guide, and learns that he is the one who can stop the events, and Frank has been sent to guide him. What would you do if you saw the spirit of a dead body? What would you think? Nadine, Claire, Larry, James, and the sheriff have to determine what needs to be done during a meeting of the minds to find out who or what is behind Maggie's strange behavior, Shannon's unpredictable actions, and Katrina's apparent suicide. One black book can stop it all, past, present, future, your own, your friends, and who is wicked, who is causing the evil. Will anyone listen to Lola before it's too late? Claire opens the book. What she learns, you will have to read for yourself. Because this reviewer, although offered a PDF of the book, refuses to read on her computer and does not want to know the outcome before you. Then something changes. A letter is written to the sheriff. And an investigation is launched into the events that have happened and into Katrina's death. Who sent it? What happens next in the twisted mind of a killer you just won't believe? As the story draws to close, Shannon asks Maggie to come and stay with her and deal with her mother's death. Shannon gets her mother's body cremated to return. Strange. Taking Maggie home to get her things to stay with her causes Maggie concern. And what happens between these two women causes chills down your spine. Fear in your heart gives the reader much pause for thought, as you do not know which one to trust or who will come out ahead and what the outcome will be. Shannon hates Maggie because James cares for her. Shannon hates anyone that goes near James and has threatened Maggie many times, but James is a believer. A showdown that you won't believe and an ending that has so many twists and turns you'll not see it coming. But you better not turn your back on either one of them. Who is guilty? Who is innocent? What is Shannon's fate? What is Maggie's fate? Who lives, dies, and who is really insane? My name is Lola. I have to leave Patton now. My time here is up. If you want to know what finally happens, read Hollow Screams.
Well,
it says, do you hear the screams coming from behind the doors of this mental institution? Hollow Screams comes from the one who is evil. Do you hear it? Don't listen. My name is Lola. I warned you. Did you listen? This is one outstanding novel whose characters teach you the true meaning of treachery, fear, deception, lies, and betrayal. An author so creative, she weaves a plot so intricate with incidents that not only blindsides some of the characters, but the readers too. This is one novel that is anything but hollow, filled with substance, plot, and keeping you on the edge of your seat from start to finish.
See, and she gave you five Lolas.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's Fran. Okay, now, the thing about Fran is, you know, it's very interesting because Fran reviews and makes a very long review. A lot of people go crazy from this, but let me tell you something. This is like the perfect synopsis to send people for a movie, you know, because like I do screenplays and I know you do. So, you know, and the screenplays.
No, I did, Marcia. I actually used it. I did use it. Had a good outcome.
Yeah.
And when is Spielberg making this into a movie?
Well, because that, you know, because I listen, as a screenwriter, let me say that it is so hard to do a synopsis, because that is most writers that write screenplays, they hate to do it. I mean, I'd rather write another screenplay rather than do a synopsis, because to me they sound trite. Like, here's a screenplay that tells you this is telling everything, but it's not telling anything, okay? But it's telling you how the story progresses, which is why we have bad movies, because sometimes they only read 10 pages and they go like, oh, let's do a movie, okay? And then the first 10 minutes are good, the rest is not. So, I mean, they need to have this when they're looking, you know, to sell a movie, because that is what sells the movie. Because everybody reads the scripts even, you know.
Absolutely.
Barbara, let me ask you a question, off subject, on subject. When did you consider yourself a writer?
Well, you know, I'm telling you, I just try to improve all the time, and I want to give myself credit, and I want to, you know, I love to write, I love to storytell, I love to entertain,
I'm going to tell you something. Let me tell you something. You answered it. You answered your question the same way when Bennett asked me that. Bennett asked me that question months ago, and I didn't realize he was going to put it in his articles, you know, that he was asking people. And I said exactly similar to what you said, and I'm going to tell you, the truth is, even tonight, my husband, I was handing someone a bookmark and a card for my new books. And then they said, oh, and I go like, yes, I'm a writer. And then when I walked out of the restaurant, I keep saying to myself, I am an author, I'm an author, I'm an author. I have to keep saying that because it's very hard to sit down one day and say, oh, yes, I am an author. For me it is. And I hear you saying the same thing. And you are,
I know it sounds silly. I don't know, Bennett. I don't know exactly. I've written all my life. You know, I kept a diary, and I had that diary up until I moved a couple times and lost it. But I've always made up these little short stories or these little, I've always done that. But I never really thought. You know, I'm not one to say I always knew I was going to be a writer, you know, or I always wanted to.
See, it's hard for you. All right, and I feel the same way, and this is very difficult, so I have to keep. Like, sometimes I say, okay, yes, if someone says anything, what do you do? I'm not going to say I'm an agent, I'm this, I'm that. I'm going to say, yes, I am an author, okay? You know, because I think it's very hard to say. And
used to say I'm jack of all trades, master of none.
But you did master some. You did master a lot of them, okay? And that's the thing, you know. But it is hard to say this, you know. But yeah, one important thing I want you to say, because you can buy your book a pre-order, right?
Yeah.
So where can they buy it?
They can pre-order it right now on Barnes & Noble. It'll actually come out the 31st, and when it comes out the 31st, it should be available on Amazon and Smashwords. It should be in print and in e too. Okay. Several different sites.
See, Bennett, Bennett's phone is still buzzing. I wish it weren't buzzing so much.
You want, I'll call you back, but I don't know if I'll get any better.
I know, it's the weather. I know. Okay, you know, I wanted to ask you a question, Bennett, because everybody, I'm on Smashwords, and I know that I just heard Barbara say that same thing, too. Now, as a reviewer, what is going on with Smashwords? Should people be putting it on there, or should they? I mean, it's not that they shouldn't be putting it on there.
Are you talking,
like,
the bootleg PDF files, or what are you talking about?
I'm trying to figure out the Smashwords. If when you go on Smashwords, because I've noticed on most of them that most of the people there, they don't get their reviews on there, because I'm thinking, like, if the reviewers are not going on Smashwords, they're going on, like, Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Exactly.
What's your
Barnes & Noble and Amazon are, okay, Smashwords is nice for what it is. Smashwords is basically, in a lot of ways, a sell site, rather than a review site.
They
expect somebody that reads a book to review it, but you're not getting a reviewer. You're getting a fellow reader. Let me get to the point. There are some reviewers on Smashwords, and I'm not trying to down Smashwords, but you're getting, dare I say, the old term, a fellow traveler. You're getting somebody that basically has not been reviewing. You get somebody. The one problem with Amazon is they penalize authors, they penalize reviewers when you get a three-star or four-star review. They say, oh, it's not worth it or whatever. You have to give them 5-star, and I don't like just giving a 5-star. If something is 4-star, I'm going to tell them why. But you know, I think numbers like that to me scare me, because if you're not doing 5-star review, people just sort of don't even like you.
But that's really bad, though.
Because they're not okay. It's like George Carlin used to say, we used to get this attaboy, good stuff, good.
Yeah.
You know, there is no negativity, and if you're not listening to the negative as well as the positive, you're not listening. Some people say, I don't read reviews. Congratulations, they can live in a glass world, you know,
as you know, the review is just it's an opinion. But the thing is, I don't really. Like, I don't feel bad if I don't get a 5-star review. I really don't. Maybe I should, but I don't, you know, because I'm trying to...
Let me say this about that, and I'm not trying to interrupt you, Mark, but let me say this.
No, it's okay. No, I'm just...
Ray Bradbury said, a review is like a tushy. There are other words. He used the A word, but I'm trying to keep it clean. A review is like a tushy. Everybody's got one.
We'll get it.
I'm glad we all get it. A review is like a tushy. We all have one, and we all use it in our own ways. Okay, but still, everybody's allowed to use their tushy in whatever way they want, and that's the point. A reviewer is that, you know. You can be the great Harlan Ellison is an acetate reviewer. He would tell a person in everything but 4 letters how ripped him up one side down the other. And if you didn't get ripped by Harlan, it wasn't a good piece of work, which is, I'm different. I don't try to be Mary Sunshine, but I try to put myself in the reader's place and say, hey, or the listener's place when I do audio, this is what I'm hearing. This is what it's about. Or I've read the book, I've heard the audio. Get it, miss it, and this is why. When I did Bristol Palin's book, I gave it 1-star. And people were like, oh, well, you're picking on Bristol. No, she can't read. And this woman I remember named Jane Austen in Amazon, you guys can look it up on my profile page, go down to the comments, and this woman named Jane Austen says, this person didn't read the book. Well, no, I listened to the audio, read by Bristol, and I said that in my review 4 times.
Right.
But this woman, Jane Austen, in press, in the section said, you didn't read the book. Well, you're right. I didn't read Bristol's book. I had Bristol read it to me.
Right. Okay.
You know, on a CD. That doesn't mean that I loved it or hated it, but I was honest enough to think that Bristol did a terrible job. Now, I just heard J.C. Dugard's book recently. That's The Stolen Life. And J.C. Dugard has a very childlike voice, but there is no other narrator that could have done that kind of emotion that you got on that 7.5 hours that you couldn't get an actress, say, even Meryl Streep, who I love, you couldn't get Meryl Streep to pull off what J.C. Dugard did in her own life on that CD.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, well, listen, you know, that does make sense, because it is important who, when you're doing an audio, if you like the person's voice. I mean, it really...
Even the words, I read the book as well. The book tore me up emotionally. It is a very, I'm not saying, Barbara, your work isn't emotional, but when I almost wanted to reach through the pages and see if I could help this woman. You know, it was that powerful a book.
Yeah.
And that powerful, when you listen to it, it's that powerful in audio. I'm not saying it's for everybody, and I'm, you know, somebody's like, well, you don't like this genre or that genre. I like all genres. I just would rather tell an audience, when I'm telling somebody, get this book or don't get this book, why? If something is bloody and gory, that's fine. Give me Stephen King on a half shell. I love it. But if somebody says, I read this, this book reminds me so much of The Stand, I'll tell them it reminds me of The Stand. If I go back and I say, this reminds me of Henry Nutter's The Last Mimsy, Mimsy with the Bargroves, and they go, what the heck is that?
Well,
they don't know anything.
Well, right, you know, but see, because some of the books, like, if you're saying it's like this and that, I mean, there's new readers every year. I mean, people are coming, you know, growing up and reading different books. So the book, you know, you're seeing it one way, and these people, a lot of the kids might not have read some of the other books. And that's okay, though, but that's your opinion, okay? And so, but I think that if you stop writing because someone gave you a bad review, I think you have to stop and think, why are you in this? Are you in this because you like your book? If you love your book and someone gives you a bad review, just go on, you know, and just because if 10 people go to a movie, 5 people may like the movie, 5 people may not. So, I mean, it's an opinion. And I think that that's why there should be a lot of reviewers. However, I just think that people are, you know, they're relying too much on the reviewer and not writing or stop writing or changing their writing because a reviewer may tell them something. And sometimes, yes, it does help because I do like to hear criticism because I like it. It makes me learn. But not everybody
well,
does.
I will tell you, there's an author that I reviewed her book, and I gave her a copy, early copy of the review. And she said, you don't get my book at all. You don't know anything about royalty. And I then told her what I know about royalty. And she then said to me, she says, you know, well, I'll go and explain my book to you. I said, if you have to explain, you're going to every reader that reads your book and explain your book? Come on. And she went to some of the romance writers and said to him, says, you've got to pan this critic because he doesn't know what the heck he's talking about. And I write for a Fair Decor magazine, so I do know a little about romance. I've only been writing for them since 1988, so I don't know anything about romance at all. And if you believe that, I've got about a dozen other writers that will tell you I do. I remember Kit Mars once told me, she says, you know, you're one of the few men that get me. And that was in front of her husband.
I think the thing is...
Oh,
did
you laugh at that one, Barbara?
Yeah.
I think, Barbara, now you can actually say you are a writer. I think you can do this. You can say you're an author now because you are. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. You know, do you feel like you've had some success in what... I'm not talking monetarily on how you feel about people are talking about this book or have liked the book. I mean, you know, what are you feeling right now?
Well, I'm really feeling really good. And I'm feeling good about, you know, about Holland Streams. I feel that, you know, I took my time and like I said, I threw out some and added some, and I just you know, I just kept working with it until, you know, I got it, you know, like I wanted it, and I just feel really good about it.
Since I write a column in Night Owl, which is advice for writers, let me ask you, did you ever feel like you were going to give up when you wrote your book?
No, I didn't. I did not. And that goes.
And what was the encouragement or what self-talk did you give yourself, or however you want to call it, that stopped you from giving up? It's, you
well,
said it took 3 years.
Yeah, I just, it was like my baby, you know, and that's how I felt about all of them. And even when I did get discouraged and I put it back, you know, it would just haunt me. It would stay with me. And the characters just, they just grow on me. And it's like, you know, it's kind of like when I'm writing it, it's kind of like another author that Marcia, you know, Larry Sheridan.
Yeah,
I like Larry.
Like,
he's a good fan.
It's like a movie for me in my mind, you know, and it won't let go. And, you know, so I never did think about it.
Yeah, because, it's written, like a movie. I mean, because the descriptions are not too much. I mean, it's written like a movie, you know, and that's because that's probably coming from your eyes, how you see it, you know, and that's a good thing, you know, and, because, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, you know, when a lot of people think their books are going to be movies, but some of them, they really can't be, you know. I mean, every book is not to be a movie, but there are a lot of books that are movies, and they're very good. And that's really, you know, a good thing, because, you know, sometimes when they are making a movie from a very good book, people say, oh, the book is better, this is not, you know, but sometimes they are equal. It depends who's doing the acting and if they keep a lot of the dialogue straight to the characters. And I think that, you know, you're in all facets. And I think that if you continue on this way, I mean, you know, writing scary is hard. Sandra, are you on? Sandra?
Yes, ma'am.
Sandra,
okay.
Are you there?
Okay, Sandra, how do you feel about this, you know, about writing? Because I know that you're getting into this field about writing. Do you feel like since you've been listening to different shows that you're actually learning a lot and getting more confidence yourself?
Yes, definitely. I've learned a lot just from listening.
Yes,
there's so much that goes on with writing.
Yeah. Barbara, what do you think? I mean, about that, is, you know, do you feel that? That you're, that's from all, yes, because I told. And I say, listen, don't even, I'm not saying to listen to my show only. I'm saying listen to other shows that are not just mine, but I mean, I listen to a lot of these shows. And from every single show, I think I pick up something else that I say, oh, my God, that sounds great. This is a good idea, you know, because I think it's a different idea we all have. And I think it's a good thing. You know, when we're all doing different things, we're all writing differently, but we're all feeling the same things when we hear some of these, you know, they say, like, I can do this. And, you know, by keep going on, like when Bennett asked you, did you ever feel like you can't go on? That's a good thing that you didn't.
Well, so there have been some writers that give up.
Yeah,
definitely. I didn't give up. I wrote a book, and I spent about 3 years trying to get it published. And this is before there was self-publishing out there, but I went through mainstream publishers, and it got turned down so many times, and it hurt me, but I still have the book, and I may throw it into the self-publishing arena, I may not. You know, you get discouraged when you get a form letter saying, hey, we reject you, and then I just always remembered the Marjorie Kinnon Rowling story. Which I think is one of the famous reasons why I don't give up. But I wanted to ask Barbara a question. I wanted to ask Sandra a question. What authors inspire you?
Sandra,
who is it?
I didn't hear that
either.
What authors inspire you?
Okay.
I'm glad you didn't ask me that, because I really hate that question. Just drives me crazy. I'm seeing that nobody wants to answer. See, a lot of times people don't answer that question because I don't know. I think it, like a story like this, I think this came out of her. This came out of you, right? I mean, it's just your head.
But I tell you, I to answer, I had the very first time I've seen, first off, Alfred Hitchcock was just like, you know.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm back there with Alfred Hitchcock and I just love that, the twists and turns and the, you know, not knowing and this and that. And
do you appear in your own book somewhere?
I don't think in this kind of book you should say where you appear. We don't want to know.
Well, I mean, you know, I hate to say it. When I do fiction, I always try to make a character that's so much like me that the character meets me somehow. I'm in the book somewhere just for a few seconds.
No,
so, I'm my own Hitchcock. I like to throw Bennett in somewhere, but I never say, it's Bennett.
It's That is absolutely true. And yes, in every one of them that I have written, and you know, I didn't really, it was kind of subconscious. You know, my daughter read Speaking of Behind the Red Door the first time, and then she read Thorns of an Innocent Soul, and she was like, Mom, you know, you're in this. You know, you're in this a little bit here and there. And I'm like, what? And you know, we talked it over.
But darling, you look so young. You can't have a daughter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've got grandchildren. But anyway.
Well, there was my niceness for the day. You've got my critic's niceness for the day, okay? Now I get away with at least something from that.
Oh, see, I think, you know, yeah, okay. Sandra, do you want to answer that question or not? Do you have a famous author that you...
I knew the first time I read Edgar Allan Poe that I would write. I mean, I've loved poetry all my life. Everything was great school. And made up stories for my little sisters and stuff. And I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. I'm almost 50, by the way. And we went to school together for 11 years. And she said, I always would write because she always told the best story.
See, so those are the writers that, you know, and these are the things that people still read, you know. I mean, because when you go to a library, which people don't go that much anymore, but sometimes, you know, I like to go in just to, you know, look around. I haven't done it as much as I used to, and actually I used to sit and write in the library, and I really need to do that again because it's completely quiet, you know, and I would go in a quiet.
You haven't been in a library lately, Marcia.
I know. Well.
And they have their iPods, but if you're looking at something on a shelf, they have their iPods. You can almost hear the music through their earphones.
Yeah, but I don't know, in some of the libraries.
They open the libraries. They're doing a lot of activities and stuff now, too. So
we have quiet rooms. I know it's hard to...
No. This is a quiet room, and this kid had his iPod with the headset on, and he had, thank God it was Glee, he had the soundtrack, one of the soundtracks of Glee, and you can hear da-da-da through the ears. I'm like, can you lower that? Hey, man, I got one of my headsets. I'm listening.
I know that, but basically, you know, the library is a place that sometimes you go to. Some do. I need to go more. I mean, I really do. I think that's what's happened with the internet. We're not in the library like we were, you know, but I plan on going to the libraries because I'm actually going to try to get in some of the libraries and read some of the books rather than just in the schools, you know, because I think that the kids really like, because I do children's books, I think the kids absolutely like to hear the author, you know, as much as at the beginning I wasn't sure if I wanted to do that, but I know that the kids really enjoy it when the author comes to the school and they talk, and, you know, so I think that I will probably be going more in libraries, but, you know, yeah, we don't have to do that anymore. It's all done at home, you know, in our computer or in offices, wherever we are, but sometimes it is good to look and see some of the old books that are still out there that people really do like, you know, and they're going to start to put them, I think, Bennett, you know this too, I think they're going to start putting them on e-books, a lot of these books now.
Exactly, they are.
Yeah.
The only problem with e-books is there's no human interaction. I love some authors, like my friend Bruce Colville goes into schools, and I go into schools. I love Career Day.
Yeah.
Except when they say to you, you know, well, all writers I know are rich and famous and are so great, and I've never heard of you at all.
Yeah.
And you smile and say, yeah, right, okay.
Well, there are so many writers now. I mean, there's everywhere you turn, there are writers. And that's, you know, and a lot of them aren't that good, but a lot of them are great. And, you know, hopefully they'll get to where they need to go someday because we're all in competitions with millions and millions of people. And I think that's what people are feeling bad about if their books don't make a lot of money. It's the state of the economy also, and it's trying to get yourself out there. It's very difficult, and you have to almost do a little something different to get yourself out of there, you know, being like everybody else, because everybody does have their own unique voice. I really do think so. also. And I hope that, you know, some of the writers that are in this that have just done this for money will maybe just be out a little, and then there'll be room so people can actually buy a lot of these people's books. And I think on ebooks, because it's more affordable, I do think that people will be reading books they never would have read before. And
well, I think we've lost so many to the past that we need to regain some of the old books that we have. A lot of the short stories and books that we've lost, with an ebook you can download. Or I know there's a book, an author named David Gerald, that has, he gives you a choice of 20 stories, and you can make whatever book you want of all of his, pick 10, and you for 10 for $5 or whatever it is, and you can make a book of 10 of his short, 10 of his novellas or whatever for $5, and you get to pick and choose.
Well,
so you
you
know.
I mean, there's so many new things happening all the time now, and, you know, I think that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I still think that, you know, as far as just people should continue to write, you know, and not give up because they're not getting published, and I do think because there's a lot of now smaller publishers out there, you know, such as, you know, the World Castle, where I'm being published right now, and also Dancing with Bear Publishing, they're pioneering in a very new field, and I really hope they both, you know, I know both of the owners, and I think that they should, I really hope that they succeed, because this will get some books in there that we might not have had. And this is, they're not self-publishers. They are traditional publishers. They are smaller publishers, but they're actually looking at books for content and make sure that they're good and seeing that these people get a place out there that have absolutely been overlooked.
Exactly. Well, let me ask you, I want to ask our guest a question here.
Yes.
Barbara, I had a great editor, and this editor edited me well, okay? And I loved him dearly, and the reason why I'm bringing that up, you ever had a good editor? Or do you do your own editing?
No, I edit myself, but I also have an editor, and she is fantastic. And the thing about it is, you know, you can edit your book. I mean, you have to yourself, you know, as you go along. You can't, you know, you don't want to send something in that, you know, that you haven't edited at all or anything.
They have to get it. I had a great editor,
and I say this, he still is a great guy, but he and I debated for an hour, we discussed for an hour whether Eagle swooped or dived. I say swoop. He still says dive. Of course, he's the final decision after we had a discussion.
Right.
We discussed it. I mean, he was open to talk to me about it, and we tried to explain both sides, and we were discussing it, and I said, he says, but I'm the editor, and it's dived. I said, fine, you win.
Yeah.
The same thing has happened with me. You know, there would be times, you know, well, it shouldn't be, I think it'd be better if it's worded this, which she is really good about, you know, I mean, she wants me to keep my voice, you know, and my vision. But it's just like you said, you know, with things like that, which, like, you know, those are little things, you know. But, you know, the main thing is to keep, you know, I want to keep my vision, you know.
Yeah. That's the thing. You have to have an editor, right? You have to have an editor that keeps your voice because you don't want to lose it. And, you know, I to have it edited. I'm not an editor, and I tell this all the time. I'm really not an editor at all. I don't want to edit my own things at all. It's just not for me. And I think when you have an editor that understands who you are and how you write, then it will be your voice. But if you have an editor that takes out certain things that change the whole story, and then you go, like, now what? You know, they've changed your whole story, that it's not anything, you don't recognize it. And as we all know as writers, if somebody changes something at the very beginning, let's say, and they change a part of the character, the whole story changes. You've got to change that character all the way through. And I think that some editors do not write books, you know, their own. So, you know, they're looking to make it sound right, but sometimes you have to have your character do what it needs to do, whether the editor thinks it's right or not. Sometimes it's, because otherwise it changes your whole story and it does not come out right.
Barbara, do you use an outline or do you basically just off-road your characters?
Well, I do a lot of outlining.
You do outlining?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Do outlining? I can't. Do you do outlining? Is that what you said?
You outline, but do you ever just take them off-road from the outline?
Not very often. Sometimes, but not very often. And I don't know if you heard this, that some writers, a bigger percentage of writers think that writing short stories is more difficult than writing, a novel, a long story. But to me, the short stories that I have written it's been much easier for me than it was, writing this longer piece. It's hard because you have to keep, your timeline in place. You have to, you have to really make sure at all times, what your character's doing. You can't, you don't want to put them in one place when they're supposed to be in another. I really had to keep up with that in this book because there is, the timeline of it and there's so much going on. And with each one, there's not like just one or two primary characters. There's about, four or five, primary characters. So it was a little bit more difficult to keeping up with them,
Have you ever decided, do you have your next book written yet?
Actually have two that I was working on. I'm working on a sequel to Halloween Scream and a sequel to Behind the Red Door.
I mean, that's really important.
Bless you. I'm on the list for Behind the Red Door. Thank you.
But I think that's what, in my book, Field of Passion, people have said to me, are you doing a sequel? And I really was not planning on it, but the way the market is now, I think people really want sequels. I mean, they want to know what really happens to the characters, later on. And I think that is a way to put yourself in another grouping as far as writers, because I think
this is where we disagree. I would rather see a solo story with the characters. If you want to revisit them a year, a month, whatever, later.
No, I agree.
Too many publishers these days milk a series because they ask for three books or four books or six books with the same character.
But the people want it, though. The reader likes it.
Well, the reader doesn't always like it, but the thing is, because that's the pablum we're fed in movies and in books and everything else. I like to at least, I love James Bond. I love the classic Ian Fleming and things like that. I love Tintin, which they're making into a movie. I love that kind of stuff. But I also, I liked Ellery Queen. For one, he was a great character. But he didn't just sit in his laurels and hardies. He wrote about 75, 100 books. And only like five of them were Ellery Queen by Ellery Queen. The rest were just very different other kinds of books, not even the anthology kind. I'm just talking the books by Queen were always changing the genre. And that's what was amazing because it was still Ellery Queen, but it was Ellery Queen writing a different style of mystery every time. You'd have a closet, a locked room, and things like that. Agatha Christie, she wrote Poirot, she wrote Marple, but she also wrote The Mousetrap.
Well,
you had different ideas.
Bennett, I think that's, I've always felt that way. However, that one you should write that. But what I see in the market, from what I can see, is that people are asking for sequels, and the people that are now doing sequels are doing very well, and they're keeping their characters alive. And then I had never thought about it, to be truthful about doing a sequel. I mean, maybe in children's books I would have thought that, and I will probably do that with my No Clues, No Shoes. But I never thought about it, and they're asking for it, and I am surprised. But I think that some of the writers, that readers that are out there now, they feel familiar. They like find familiarity in the characters, and they want to read more about them. And
but
I
that's
am
why
surprised.
We have Pirates of the Caribbean 5 and 6 on the
right.
schedule.
But, okay.
That's
but,
why we're remaking
okay.
Dark
the,
Shadows
okay.
instead
however,
of going for the original
however,
plot.
So, however, though, the one thing I can say, though, is if you have 3 movies, let's just say, if you absolutely have 3 movies that have good quality, like if you have 3 books that are still good quality, and if you have 3 movies, and these people can't write the 3 movies, because I do screenplays, so I'm saying if they don't really, some of the plots they can't really think of, okay? And if they don't, they shouldn't have it. But when they do a box office success, if it's the 5th one and they make money, they're going to make a 6th. They don't care. It's not like a book in a lot of ways, because if you're writing a book and each book is good, it may, you know, it brings in new characters, then I think that could succeed. As far as the movies go, yes, they push it, but they're making money. And that in the movie industry, it's box.
Well, I hate to say it, movie industry is also reflective on the book industry. I mean, J.K. Rowling did Harry Potter, and Harry Potter, of course, finished in book 7. But
yeah.
Now she's got a Potterland, which is like the land where Harry Potter characters live. I'm like, we've had enough.
But however,
you know,
there's a new group of young kids coming up, and they may like this. You know what I mean? You know, there's always new kids coming up to read these books. She gets the attention of kids, which is very difficult to do. You know, especially in a movie. It's really hard. I mean, when I went to first see Harry Potter, that when it first came out, I could not believe that these kids are just sitting there, 12-year-old boys just sitting there, not even going out for popcorn. They're actually glued to the movie. And I thought it was great that she could get their attention, you know, and she's maintained their attention. So if she writes something different, hopefully she can maintain of the new upcoming generation the same way. I mean, she might be able to do it.
Well, we're hoping, but
yeah.
I hate to say it. Okay, I was talking to a group, and they said basically, you know, oh, I love Pirates of the Caribbean, and I said, have you read Treasure Island? Who?
Yeah, well, I know. See, that's yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. The original Treasure Island, Long John Silver is like Captain Jack Sparrow to me. I mean, I'm sorry. Give me Long John Silver with the parrot on his shoulder, and you have the classic image, not the swashbuckling Errol Flynn Captain Jack Sparrow, who believes in conning half people out of everything. But
well, like,
people
look,
buy
I mean,
that.
You know, we've talked about this before, and I just will say one thing about this isn't really so much about what we're talking about, but it is in a way. Like, you know, the Turner Station, they pick up a lot of old movies, and people are watching them, you know, and there are young people watching them. And we've talked about the fact of Mildred Pierce, and, you know, Mildred Pierce was Joan Crawford's movie, and actually it was nominated for a lot of awards. And I mean, they won the Emmys for Mildred Pierce, which was a very, very tough thing to pull off, I think.
No, I think because they follow, okay, the Mildred Pierce that we saw or was out in the late 50s, early 60s, was basically tamer than today. They followed the McCain book a lot more in depth and went in more in depth in the characters and was a little more promiscuous and risque. Because McCain's book was promiscuous and risque, and at that time they still had the censor office in your movies. So they got away with a lot more with what they had today than they did 40 years ago. They just did, Stars did a Moby Dick with William Hurt playing Ahab.
I think they're doing this. I think, you know, listen, I think that the markets, I mean, I wish I knew the answer. There isn't one, you know, and I really think that's what I was talking to Virginia, you know, the other part of World Living Network, and we talk about this all the time. I mean, every month or every week, everything is changing. It's changing so fast that a good writer just has to keep writing what they like to write, because I don't know there is an answer, you know. And I think that, Barbara, I think you probably agree with that, because you just keep going and you're writing what you want to write.
Yeah.
And you will, I'm sure, find an audience that will, because your book is very good and your writing is good, and I am sure that there's an audience that's going to be very happy with this, and they're going to want you to do more. That's a good thing, you know, and I think you should, and I do, and that's, you know, I mean, you had quite, I mean, I think between the last time I think when I was on Candace's show, that's where I think I met you, because you called in, I think. That was...
Yeah.
Well, that was like a long, that was like a year, probably a year already, maybe a year already. Was it a year? It could have been. And, you know, I mean, all the questions that you had then, you've answered yourself, because you're out there now. So that's a good thing. I mean, I think you're much more confident.
Well, she's been out there since,
writer.
I think, 2006, 2005.
No, but she was not, but right, but she wasn't thinking she's out there, but I think she's absolutely out there now. She's now more confident.
Yeah.
She knows that she's got, I think you have what it takes, and I think that's a good thing. That's why I wanted to have you on the show, because I think that that's what this, my show is always about, is keeping the writer out there, and you are out there. See, you just weathered the storm, and you're there. You know, and
so,
I think that's
so, so are you weathered the storm with more product? Do you get, you said two sequels. You have anything else you're working on that's not a sequel?
No, not at the moment. I've really just kind of been, you know, focused on Hollywood Screams and getting it, you know, getting it out there. But now I have, I wanted to mention, a guy by the name of Jimmy Nakov, that's N-A-K-O-V. And what happened was back, it's been about two years now, I had seen a little clip of a documentary that was called For Alan. And it was just really, I really liked it. It was about a gentleman over in New Zealand that he'd done a marathon run, and it was the longest run. It was like 7 days, and he had done it for, in honor of his brother that had died with leukemia. And anyway, Jimmy Nakov was the director, and I just kind of got to looking, and I found him on Facebook, and I kind of got networking back and forth a little bit, and I was, you know, talking to him about this documentary, and I got to looking him up, and I noticed, you know, quite a few other things that he had, you know, directed, and he had, you know, in cinematography and stuff. And he asked me, he had seen where somebody had posted about Behind the Red Door, I believe. And he had asked me about that and said he would like, you know, he would like to get it. And so I told him, I'll send it to you, you know, just let me send it to you. So I sent it to him, and I went ahead and sent it and Thorns of Innocent Soul to him. And it wasn't just a couple of weeks. You know, I heard back from him, and he just really, really liked him. And at the time, he was working on a script called Blindside. And
there you go.
The screenplay was actually by Chantel Rayner Burt and Sean O'Connor, but they were having a problem with the main character, Becky, and he wanted me to take a look at the script and just see what I thought about it, how I felt about it, her character, you know, the way it was going, and if I, you know, to make any suggestions, whatever, that they would, you know, and not saying they would use them or whatever, but
right, but sometimes you want another person's opinion,
yeah,
of what,
right.
Yeah.
And so he sent it to me, and I looked it over, and you know, I made my suggestions, and I sent them back, and then it wasn't but about a week later, and he was, you know, we want to use 90% of this, you know.
Wow.
This is what we want to do. You know, he talked it over with them, and that's what they wanted to do, and they would give me credit, you know, for the voiceover of Becky, and which they did. And anyway, in this last 2 years, we went back and forth, and he wanted, you know, then he wanted the rest of my books, and then he wanted a copy of Howling Screams. And so I sent him the PDF of Howling Screams, and it wasn't just a little while back, you know, later, and he got with me again, and he wanted to send me, you know, a contract through Zodiac Entertainment. He wanted to send me a contract for, you know, one or all of the books, and, you know, explain how it would go, you know, and this and that. And so, you know, that's what I'm working with right now. And he is, they have just in the last 3 weeks made up movie posters for Howling Screams and Behind the Red Door and Thorns of an Innocent Soul. And then they've done in the last...
Hey, let me ask you a question. Okay, when you're saying that, you know, because this is what I'm thinking of myself on a lot of these things. So they optioned, they're optioning...
What they're doing is they're going to do this themselves. They're, Demi is the director, and then he has, you know, several.
Okay, so they're going to, so they optioning it to be a production, right? To go into production? Okay. So, so what are they, they're putting stuff out on YouTube, or how are they doing that? What are they doing?
Well, what they've done, Blindside, they're actually, they're movies, and what they're doing is when they get done editing, they send them into the film festivals. Like he's had quite a few, you know,
so they're taking your book. They've done that already, or
that's what their Howling Screams will be the next one. He has two
others. All right, yeah, because I have an option too. Wait, I have an option. I'm just wondering if they're promoting it now already.
No, not already.
Okay.
No.
Okay, I just wondered if they're doing that, because I'm thinking, because I'm thinking, like, one of the problems is when you do productions, because I'm in a, you know, but actually this one, it's an option, and this one actually probably will get done. And the thing is that with other screenplays that are not fully, like, produced or funded, people have to go out and get money. This is the problem.
Yeah.
And what I'm wondering is, are people going to, I wanted to start doing this, you know, doing YouTubes about, you know, so maybe other people that are, because as we know, one person doesn't do just a whole movie. There's a lot of production companies that need to be in it.
Right.
So I just wondered, I thought maybe you were saying that they were going to try. See, I don't know. I'm looking for answers, too, like, because I know that a lot of them, or I have 11 screenplays, but some of them are optioned. But the thing is that when it's optioned, you still need to have, you know, money out there. So that's one of the problems. I thought maybe they were going to try to do that first, you know, try to go out and get money in the meantime.
Well, the way I understand, they're working on the scripts right now.
Okay, yeah, right. So they can't go out without that yet. Yeah, yeah. I mean, like when people option a book, what they don't realize is, because we've optioned many from Marcus Bryan, we've optioned books, but the problem is that they still have to go out and get a scriptwriter.
Right.
And even though they were my clients, I didn't attempt to do their scripts because I prefer not to. I've done one already from an outline, and I find it really much easier when I do my own. Because I find it very difficult, you know, but I did it as an experiment to see if I can go through, if I can take someone's work, someone, what their thoughts are, and make it my own. It's hard, very hard.
Right.
And I chose to, I don't know if I'll do this again, you know, but I did it for an assignment, and I did it. You know, I got it done, and I was so happy when it was done. And they know that the women that wanted me to do their, you know, their outline, from their outline, because I had to stick to an outline. But I did it as a project in my mind to see if I could do it. It's not easy.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know that I want to do it again, because I write screenplays also. So I, for me, it's very difficult to take someone's work, and I guess I did it, but I don't know that I'd want it. You know, it's hard, you know, and I'm sure that, you know, that's what happens out there. They're taking books, and it's hard to sell it from a book, because production companies have tried to do this. They still need the script sometimes, because even though they like the book, I mean, sometimes it works for people, and sometimes it doesn't, but I think that, you know, I do feel that a lot of times production companies should be looking at more books, because they're not thrilled with the scripts that they get. So if they read the books and they like the books, maybe someone on their team can write it. you know, to how they like it. It's a very tough business. You know, I mean,
I'm sorry, don't give it to a gifted writer, please. Oh, don't, please don't give it to a gifted writer.
I didn't say gifted.
But if you give it to one of their writers, it's a gifted writer you're giving it to.
Well.
And they decide to leave your title and just decide to write a book their way. And they don't tell the author what they've done, and the author says, oh, I'm going to go to the movies. And suddenly it's not their book they see on screen. They see their title.
Based on the concept.
Well,
you know what they need to do then? They need to have whoever their agent is or lawyer, they have to write in there if they don't like what they see to get not to have their name on it because it's not their story. That can be done.
Yeah.
Well, Anne Rice once said, and what amazes me, Anne Rice once said, she says, I know if I'm selling my book to Hollywood, I know I'm not going to get my book. So I just take the money.
Well, okay, on that note, we probably should end the show, but I want to just repeat again where they can get your book. And absolutely, you have an open invitation. Barbara, you can come on. If you have something you want to talk about, please come on and email me. Anytime.
Thank you so much, Marcia.
I'm so happy we got together on the show finally. Okay, so do you want to do me a favor? Tell them where they can get the book at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And what's your website?
My website is www.BarbaraWatkins.net.
And you're also on LinkedIn. You're on all the social networking because you're everywhere. And, you know, that's a good, I mean, you're in a lot of genres, which is very good. I mean, it's very tough to be in both genres, you know, screenwriting and, you know, books. It's tough, but it's really great because it is, I think, writing screenplays for me helps me write a better book because I see it differently now.
Well, I tell you, when I worked on this on the blind, you know, on Blind Side, that was the first time, so I really don't, you know, I don't really consider myself a screenwriter whatsoever. But I did, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, the process of it and you know, giving life to the character.
See, that, it's really fun. I mean, I really love doing screenwriting.
And when is the DVD coming out?
What?
The Blind Side, your script.
Well, I don't know for sure, but I tell you, I feel really good about. I have a really good relationship with Jimmy.
That's great. See, that's so important. You know what? It's so important in that business.
I do, and I do trust him, and he's
good.
Really. But he's done some really good things, and you know, he's won some really good awards, and what I've seen that he has been involved with, I've really thought.
In your writing, you're very visual, so I think that that's why you'll be fine, because I can, you know, that's really what you have to be, is visual with a lot of cuts, because you have 120 pages and no more, and mostly now they want 100 pages because, or 90 now because of the money, each page is a minute. So, you know, so I think that, you know, I wish you luck with that, and, you know, screenwriting is great. I love doing screenwriting. Okay, so because we're going to have to get off soon. All right, and Bennett, I know you're on next week with me. And
I am on next week with the Countess Elizabeth Black and Leanne Sondheim Murphy and horror movie host Count Gore Duvall for A Horrible Night on Blog Talk Radio.
And that will be fun.
And I will be, of course, appearing in Night Owl this month with a lovely column by Leanne Sondheim Murphy. And also, so you know, I'll be doing some appearances throughout the metropolitan area. And so that's why I'm so hyped on talking about you guys. And I'll be here next week with everybody, and we'll be talking about some other things, including horror,
Sandra,
have a special guest.
Sandra, will you be joining us, Sandra? Sandra?
Sure.
Will you be joining us?
Sure, I'd love to.
Good? Okay, good. All right, this is good. Okay, and also, Bennett, Joanne Buchanan from World Castle may be coming on, because I think World Castle has a lot of horror writers. And
I would love to talk to her. Who I was talking about,
special
guest.
She's on sharkradio.com, and that's her show. She's 5 days a week. And she's a lot of fun. So she'll be on the show, and I hope that Barbara, you'll listen in on that show, and it's, you know.
Oh,
yeah.
Barbara,
yeah.
If you're available, come on. It's a party.
Right. Yeah, right.
Oh,
exactly.
I tell
right.
you.
Right. And, you know, if Candace feels better, we'd love Candace to just say hi. But, you know, I know that she's in a lot of pain, so I don't think that'll happen yet. But soon. Soon she'll come on. All right, so this all sounds really good. So, and then also, Virginia has a show on, let's see, Virginia has a show on Tuesday at 12 o'clock. It looks like it's in the afternoon. It's 11 o'clock Mountain Time. So I think that she'll be on, and then we have a show Wednesday. So ours is the 11th and hers is the 10th. And we have a fun month coming up. So you can go on, you know, www.michiganavenue.com and find out what's going on, or go on blogtalkradio.com and look up World of Inc. Network, because we have really a lot of shows coming up. And Bennett is also going to be doing a show in November. And, we have a breast cancer show on it's going to be on 9 o'clock on Thursday, October 13th. It's Survivors of Breast Cancer, and because this is Breast Cancer Month. So I think this is where I got a full month going on here. So
And I will be on that show as well, because my uncle was a breast cancer. Well, there is male breast cancer. My uncle was a breast cancer survivor.
Oh, okay, so you'll be on the show also. Carol Pressel will be on. She was on last year. She's a survivor for several years, and she'll be on the show. And I'm going to open it up to see what happens, you know, on Facebook, if people want to come on and tell their stories, because I think that we all need to hear survivors. It's a very, very tough disease to go through. But when you're
I have a call to an actress that may or may not come on the breast cancer show.
Okay. Right.
And she, let's say it this way, she's been in People and a number of other things talking about her cancer.
Yeah,
so
I think it's really good to hear that. Yeah, I think it's good
if
to
I
hear
can
that
get her, it depends. Depending on their schedules with her new series, I can't say which one, but she wants to do our show.
Yeah, I know who that is, I think. I'm pretty sure I get that.
I think you do, but that's okay.
Yeah, I think I do. But that, you know, but I think that anybody, you know, that is out there that wants to come on the show can feel free to, you know, to tell their story, because I think everybody hears have to hear about survivors, and there are a lot of them, so that's a good thing.
Absolutely.
So yeah, we have come a lot. So all right, Barbara, thank you. You've come a lot further than we were. Barbara, thank you. And Sandra, thank you so much. And now I won't have to email you. Are you coming? Are you coming to the show? Because you just said you were. So this way I won't have to do that. But, you know, and we're also going to have Bennett. People are going to send you books, I guess, right?
It keeps me working.
Okay. All right. So that's good. And
it keeps me working. And, you know, there'll be a lot of things coming up, because I have upcoming in Amazon. I have Larry Sheraton's and Candy O'Donnell's and a couple other people's books I will be reviewing, as well as the new It Takes a Thief DVD that I just got. Hallelujah for small miracles.
Right, that's good. Okay,
then you'll have mine.
Wait a second. I'll have yours? Good.
He's going to love yours. He's going to love it. And Sandra's going to, you're going to send me a copy and Sandra one. And Sandra will email you her address, and I'll do the same. You know, my address is all over the place. It's all over my website, but Waylon will, because we're all going to have, I really think it's important to have reviews by people that are really writers and interested in what you do. You know, I think I think it's important for people to have the right people getting reviews. You know, and Bennett agrees with that. I know that.
I think so, Liz. That's what my card says.
I know. And you have a lot of experience. Right, but, you know, that's right. That's why, but, you know, it's good that there are a lot of people coming up into this field, but you also, you know, you're out there and you've reviewed a lot of books. So I think that's good for people, you know, to send their books to you. You know, you have to take the chance and send it to a reviewer that may not give you a 5-star. That's okay. You know.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I'm honest, and that's the problem. Some people are like, "Well, you gave it 3 stars." I don't care about that. I care about letting the reader what it matters, and what matters. I don't care if it's Barbara's book, your book, or whoever's. If it's not as good as I think it should be, I'm allowed to say what I have to think. And I will tell Barbara nicely, and I send the review early, so that way you can do as much damage control as you want.
Oh, yeah. Now, I think, well, we'll leave it on a positive note. I think she's going to get a very good review from you because I am looking at her.
I liked her first novella, and if I liked her first novella, I will give every benefit of the doubt, which I did like her first novella,
yeah,
and I finally have the pleasure of talking to her live and in person. So
right. I don't want Barbara to, I don't want her to feel scared to send it to you, so it's, I'm sure.
No.
But don't you know, Marcia, I am evil. Double
yeah.
L.
Well, okay, well, that's on the horror show. We have that next week.
That's
so
why
we'll,
I'm
we'll
evil.
We'll reserve our opinion to see what happens next week. All right, good night, everybody. Have a good night.
Good night.
Okay, good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.